through both books. And Christopher Reed, who has just become one of our sort of very top exemplary poets, with winning the Costa Prize, one of only sort of four poets to do it outright. Along, so it's Douglas Dunn, Ted Hughes, and Seamus Heaney, and Christopher Reed. This mentions on the back of the book that for him, Cliff puts him in mind of the great metaphysical poets, sort of John Donne, George Herbert. So there is this sort of daring and sometimes sort of racy exploration of the physical side, and that real sort of tangential and sometimes sort of crossing run of the physical and the spiritual. So I'm delighted to welcome Cliff for what is a launching of this new collection, which is available for only £4.50 at the back. Another sort of first edition sign that'll be available on eBay hopefully in a couple of years' time for much more money than that. and I'm delighted to welcome Cliff to the podium and to a special reading for Hull. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're in a Methodist chapel and there's no drinking. And it's the first day of Lent. And I'm on antibiotics because I had a very bad abscess here, so I'm not allowed to drink alcohol anyway. So this makes me feel particularly comfortable because you have to share the pain. Simon did say he'd never seen me read sober. I can't remember doing it either, so let's see if it works. Let's start in Saigon. Hello, Moto! This is about motorcycle, taxi, they're called Seom, and you kind of hang on to the back. Hello, Moto! Back pillion, downtown Saigon, pulse, clog, some kind of sense at intersections, grins over shoulder, grunts to cell phone, guns the Honda, swerves, weaves, dodges, honks you through the torrent, head on. The city grows beyond the knowledge of any taxi driver. Awareness is the shadowed vortex of the 18-wheeler. Here they skew and yaw by horn, force field, stroke the belly of the pregnant wife, pray to both the Virgin and the Buddha. Some communal bat-like sense shears and sways, avoids the three-child, two-adult moped, lets them smile past. Let the glazier's awkward looking glass of death veer by. Accept blind faith. Don't give right of way to sleepwalkers shoulder deep in the city's tides. But be prepared to wobble, teeter, skedaddle, wehey, skate. Christmas Eve, Saigon's putting the ho, ho, ho in Ho Chi Minh City. Hello, Moto! Downtown restaurant. You don't get omnivore till you get the menu here. Take pity on the poor pangolin. Oh, please do not make me eat the still beating heart of the snake. Nor do I need a glass of its low, mazy blood. My guts are a cauldron. I'm riddled by the sphincter. I want to go home now. Hello, Moto! I think we'll stay in Vietnam. This is a... about some sculptures in Da Nang, from Cham sculptures, and there's a sculpture museum there, and they have these odd things, often just torsos, and the remnants of a forgotten empire, really. And this is in four poems that go together. And the last poem, kind of, throughout this book, there are references to Larkin, and there's a Larkin poem called Church Going, and I end up in a pagoda. But they're kind of odd quotes from Larkin. It's called Tan, a God, one. Tan. Well, here they are, some amputees, godly lepers of the worn-down stone, defaced. They need us now. Oh, so much more than we need them, they cleave to the sanctuary of this place. We understand these reliefs, the dancing girls, those hips, those breasts, they do it for us still. Elsewhere downtown, the daughters curl on bar stools, bend over pool, pop cleavage behind the eight ball. We get the God-sized feet. We understand. The owner's gone and forgotten these heavy boots, flown off for good from this clod-hopping flesh. We know that it's these weighty, unknown gods, not us, who remain here beyond recall, who are left forever nameless, earthbound, stony, and bereft, too, orange. Between Shiva, Ganesh, Uma, Garuda, a label says this lump of rocks a god, meaning some kind of god, a god perhaps, but can't say which. It's easy to ignore these eyeless agents, armless, worn-down forms, such sad gods, these misshapes propped at corners. Outside are modern proteins loll on dog carts, stunted torsos strapped to trolleys sprout limbs, clumsy Shivas anagrammed with double elbows, knees. Night, I dream defoliants, still discover smiling rocks in hieratic poses, faces serene as limbs strewn from Cambodia to the DMZ, crawl back and dioxin spring afresh, year zero, three. Heavenly girl. After the lingams, there's a dancing girl in her long-gone flesh and strings of pearls. Her veils are nothing of stone, gauzy light pinned from floating off to heaven, only where chisels fan to foam, scooped a thread, a suggestive knot around her hips, tight enough to keep that far-bound girl dancing here for the old, the fat, the lame, forever shimmying, shimmering, shivering air and rock, escaping her sandstone frame, the old dance of the living, the jiving, the piled up dead. Four, sightseeing pagodas. You look down at them, at doorway and a pillar, the kitchen gods and the gods of sky. Today I crouched to tie a shoelace, found a fat little Buddha twinkling in a corner, grinning up at my bowed head. What harm can it do entering a pagoda to light a stick or two of incense, hold them between joined palms to the inclination of your forehead, make a wish, commend a loved one, or merely think this looks like prayer. The dog is dreaming in its holy corner. This place seems worth it. You can spur the bucks, feel in your back pocket stuff along with some few thousand scruffy dong, some bank fresh greenbacks in the box. Bend to retrieve your Chinese trainers. Walk out past bikes, street vendors. Hello, moto! Find as you lose yourself in the seethe of traffic, your attitude has stiffened to some kind of awkward reverence. But these poems really do start, as Martin said, in Hull. So this poem about Paragon Railway Station, a kind of slight kind of nod to the Whitsun Weddings. It's called Double O, after the kind of gauge of kind of model trains. And I wrote this actually with a few years ago with David and some other Larkin Centre poets. We did a book called Architects, and we were thinking about the architecture of the city. And it was at the time when Hull was totting itself up, and they kind of had St. Stephen's, whatever, all in wrapping paper and things. And I thought there must be lots of plans in various architects' office about how Hull was going to be, and there are all these pictures about, you know, it's going to be fantastic and all the rest of it. And anyway, here we go. It's the notion of the ideal city. Double O. Paragon purrs, whooshed doors, whistles, maglev trains rise, aim at squares of wheat are gone on the dot towards sandpaper, wrinkles painted on the sea. Your chopper's eye shows an immaculate reef knot. Motorways, A-roads, underpasses, flyovers slip through each other to Bay's estates, leafy, neat, neighbourly streets. With health and leisure centres, big screen complexes. Escalators coil round marinas, malls swoop to galleries, cathedrals, gleaming academic towers. Maybe to mock us, there are mock-ups of all this in the mayor's office. Balsa, perspex, card, wire, felt, Hornby double O trees, hand-painted families cross concourse, zoom high to where the dinky hatchbacks are unstacked from sky. a couple of sniffs of cotton wool are caught on one lonely chimney. Back at Paragon, the facelifted station is where the future seems to have run out of steam. From up there, you'd see DIY factories, Texas, Homebase, B&Q, and further beyond where Spurn's thin bird bone of sand drifts in from the sea, the estuary, the night-bound ferry, the wake from the lit-up P&O. There are various wakes in this. I'll come to the title poem wake, but the kind of dead people or things in this. There's another whole poem about a dead mermaid. There is in the Hull Maritime Museum an authentic Victorian mermaid, and you can go and have a look at her. And she's actually, well, there's the poem. Go and have a look at her. It's called Authentic Victorian Mermaid. They fetch up here, scuttled to ledges, beached on pediments among scrimshaw, harpoons, a whaler's bow, a carved baleen seat. Bony leviathans ghost hugely through tall ships, sails. This gallery's a tail flick, the neck speared by a narwhal's horn. Your thoughts turn krill, the floor's a humpback, the stairwell spirals up inside a blowhole spout. Your Jonah in the belly of the beast, then boked back up to shore, strange creatures you can't hear, no sirens sweetly singing, but see the black nightmare maid screech, check, spatulate, fishtail, witchy fingers, stitched sealskin, your face to face with a scary Victorian freak, snarped on that gob of tiny fish hooky teeth. Okay, the title poem Wake is in fact starts as a translation from Latin poet Sextus Propertius. It does sound really dull, but I hope it's not. Sextus Propertius is writing about his dead mistress, and he's just buried her. And this is a fairly, well, is it faithful translation? It's about faith, as faithful to Sextus Propertius as he was to his mistress. So kind of for the first five lines are kind of pretty much the same as the Latin. Then it goes off into another kind of thing. So he, it's in two parts, Wake. The first part's called The Visitation. Death's not the end of it, this much I know. Ghosts do exist. They walk right through our walls. Can't sleep, can't keep them down under shoveled earth. The dead watch us while we sleep. Peep in at your window. Lean like a leprous moon over our beds. I know this for a fact. And this is how I saw her the other night, just after the funeral. I woke and she was there. A pale shadow inches from my face, almost sharing my pillow. Watching, just watching me. Her eyes burned blue like chips of electric ice, coal eyeshadow. Her skin had this weird, unhealthy glow. Not surprising, we buried her that day. Oh, Christ. Her bones shone through as if x-rayed. I thought it was some translucent, poisonous creature, a fish, fluorescent, flattened by cold, dark pressure. That flesh I'd loved trawled up from horrible depths. No, debt's not the end of it. Far from it. Debt's too good for us, not good enough for them. They go on and on, won't let us left behind get any sleep until we finally wake. Shit scurred, sweat, wet and shivering to find it your funeral now. Your guest of honour at this other wake. Fear in your throat. You solemnly swear under pain of God knows what torment, ache to get things right or never sleep again. She's got you bang on. You get described. Her bony finger jabs right in your face. Those eyes, the flash of fire like burning pits, as she ticks off the weary catalogue of weakness, failings, faults. You are a shit. You see the angle of her hips has grown sharp beneath her shift. She's little more than recrimination, skin and bone, a slip of that girl that once she was, a flap of flesh where breast had been. Through the fear, the shadow of those tits, magnificent in her time. Low cut, she cut through parties like a prow, decupped and proud of it. And this is it. She's a ghost. And you're thinking this. She's right, you really are grade A shit. Question is, how can you lay your lover's ghost? 2, big sleep. Not fall. More like 2,000 years later at dawn, I stumble into sleep, splash dry at shallows, puddles, nothing very deep. And when I do, I have those dreams. You know the ones, the past crowds in, the ones I loved, betrayed, the girl I left for dead. They're all there, with cocktails, smoking cigarettes, joking, laughing, partying around my bed. And I can't move my limbs. I'm wedged in tight by wood and silk. Something flickers, it's candlelight, and it slowly dawns on my thick skull. What it is I'm in is a coffin. I am awake. I am awake. Next thing this morning, I've got the Buddha speaking in my ear. I am awake. Turns out some academic on start the week, and I'm thinking it's time to quit this job, this town. Check that quote this afternoon. Get myself back to where I was. Kneel at that crossroads. Say a prayer. Bury this guilty load. Then strike on out down that other road. Maybe then, given a week or two of long days marches, I'll sleep more easy. When it comes to this world of care, each night be good and dead. When find me there, these hungry ghosts, let me die in a stranger's bed. I read something from Trans. And Trans was an odd thing because I've been doing kind of some writing about Ovid's Metamorphoses and for a kind of academic thing, and I got interested in the notion of modern metamorphoses, and I came across an article in the paper about various people who believed in bodily, who liked to kind of modify themselves bodily, and one of them was a quite famous guy, I think you probably heard of him, called Enigma, who's a circus artist who has these horns implanted in his head. So I started writing about him and various other people. There's a famous Robert Mapplethorpe photo of himself with horns. I think I'll read that first and then I'll read the ones about Enigma. So the photograph is just him at these prostheses. So it's called Mapplethorpe with horns. Stripped to the waist, three quarters on, his torso glows cold as statuary, self-portrait, a black and white photo by Mapplethorpe with these little horns sprouting on his brow. The artist as fashionable devil. Cheeky accessories, snake, the hair he's artfully dishevelled. Uplit, the collarbone stark, flash with stormy electricity. But what's truly naked is these jokey prostheses, meant to be horny, but more lifelike, likeable by far than this celebrated skin. There's a warmth in that grey, clumsy as carrots or rubbery, slightly ridiculous anyway. They don't seem hard enough for horn, too intimately grubby for shell or bone. And what's altogether more humane than any hard-bodied flesh is this odd pair of vaguely embarrassed and stubby tubers poking through his hair. Oh, so I did a series of kind of metamorphic poems, and I wanted that photo of Mapplethorpe on the cover, and the Mapplethorpe estate wouldn't allow it. It can only be used on collections of his photos. So I thought, sod it, I'll paint a picture of myself and I give myself horns. So the cover is, I had to do something when the permission was refused and the book was kind of getting close to publication. So I painted this picture, and so this is the evidence picture of me and the. So I thought then, yeah, so then I wrote a poem about Enigma and me painting the painting and all the rest of it. It's called Three Metamorphic Sonnets with Horns. So Enigma has these horns made of coral implanted in his skull. And what else do you need to know? That's it, really. Okay. 1, self-portrait, a satire. Well, one weekend I gave myself horns and pointed ears, upon the chin the goatish curl of a satyr or a fawn. The canvas mirrored me as Pan, portrait of the artist as devil. Ah, the sheer humanity of the man. Varnished the thing, had it framed, stuck on the wall like a disreputable ancestor, toyed with the idea of a forebear's name, some patronymic for the music my head had heard, a kind of meme in that background beat deforming words, back engineered to genes I'd satirized, defaced.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
Two, phrenology. I am my own masterpiece, long surpassed my prentice work in steroids and tattoos, Botox, collagen, lips be stung, ribs removed. Meanwhile, nature sets dilemmas on my brows. You need your bumps felt, you do, my old grand said, and I guess it's true. Feel here where skin is stretched, these puckers bumps, look, X, 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 these little white knuckle stitches, my surgeons missing you already kisses. See how we both sign on the dotted line, here on the brow where the past is erased, where now there's no more room for frowns, here, touch, where coral knits to bone. Third and the last poem is called Enigma. Noxus perpetua una dormienda, night is an endless sleep. The classical world lives on in me, ancient as bread and circuses. Forget Linnaeus, his taxonomy's a footnote to my metamorphosis. To classify me a pedantry. You want class, try life, try mixing it, try hybrid vigour. I'm not here to be described.
Let's just say I am enigma. I am surf, I am reef, I live beyond, I thrive outside. I make a poem of myself, a satire. Make skin, coral, bone, horn, all rhyme. I seize the only day I've got, and every fucking day's my prime. If I'm defined, then let it be by pagan night.
Noxus perpetua una dormienda.
And I tick the box marked other every time.
Thank you.